Mike, you've created a series, Law and Disorder, Law and Vengeance. You have placed it in a fictional town rather than using Pensacola. I've used Pensacola. What were some of the advantages of having a fictional town?
The reason I went didn't use the name Pensacola is because I wanted to add some different features to the town. And I wanted to put features in there that in a lot of ways wouldn't be fair to Pensacola. Mm-hmm. And so I felt more comfortable doing that. I didn't want to insult anybody and have them look at it construed as my personal attack on a city that I've lived for 32 years. So I think that was part of the thing that motivated me.
That makes me feel bad.
Well, let me ask you, were you comfortable with just going on and saying this is what I'm writing about?
I was. I think for the approach I was taking, and it may be an overly grand idea, I wanted Pensacola to be featured that people would want to come to the town and see the places. Majority of the places that are in the book that I use are real places. It's Palo Fox, it's Jackson's, it's St. John's Cemetery, Bangkok Garden, the old H&O Cafe. So that I wanted to give a sense that people would want to come see this town, kind of like Midnight in the Garden in Good and Evil did for Savannah. Now, there were some negatives to that in that there are a couple of fictional places for that very same reason, is that I didn't want to put something bad happening in a place that was real, that wouldn't be fair to that business. So there are a few places that are fictional that I created for the very same reason that you talked about.
You know, you look at how to create characters. As I was reading City of Grudges, it was very apparent. I could almost pick out the characters and figure out what the relationship was to reality. As you were writing this, did that happen by mistake, or did it happen just on its own energy, or did you plan to have such a direct relationship between reality and fiction?
I wanted to create very memorable characters because, as you, I'm trying to put together a series for this. So I wanted memorable characters that were sort of express some of the essence of Pensacola, but not be really tied to real people. I mean, Walker Holmes, some people will see that as being me, but it really isn't. It's some of the things that happen are real, but the character that he portrays is really embodies a lot of the small town editors I've known over the years. The idea of having a sheriff that's very powerful and in conflict with the media is a universal story of the South. So trying to be sure that we kept the fictional characters fictional was a challenge, but I felt like they sort of embodied part of Pensacola. I mean, Walker Holmes in this book has some very powerful people that he butts heads against, but then he has sort of this Sherlock Holmes, Baker Street irregulars, all these people that he's done favors for and stories of. And an editor and a publisher in a small town develops the little people are his source.
Yeah, one other thing I saw about your writing in this book was that themes develop either by design or by some authors say they develop by second nature. That you begin writing, you're not even aware that as you're writing, what's emerging on the paper is an attitude that you have about a particular idea, and that attitude develops into a theme. And when I read City of Grudges, the theme that jumped out at me seemed to be that your discomfort with fake news, your discomfort with inability for people to understand that much of what they read or hear probably is not all that accurate.
Right, and that's really intuitive on your part. Yeah, this was based on a short story I wrote about 10 years ago, and when fake news wasn't really on the horizon, but as this story started to develop and started to fish it out, it really became about people don't want to hear what they want to hear. In this story, the town's favorite son is the one that Walker Holmes writes a story that has him arrested, and that people did not want to believe in this story, and it happens in true life. They don't want to believe bad things, maybe about the president, whether it's President Trump or President Obama, or this person or that. And news has to be impartial to those kind of feelings. And I think the other thing that ended up coming out of it was the idea of that Pensacola's a hard town to know. I mean, having lived here, you and I both lived here over 30 years, that it's still things happen in this town that we don't ever completely understand.
Well, one thing, while you're on this idea of themes, though, I want to talk about another theme that I saw, and maybe I just saw it and you didn't intend to write it. But it is a theme that we're always looking, that for some reason that we have a nature about us that we're always looking for a hero. We're always looking, one of your main characters had become such a hero in the eye of the community, and he was anything but a hero in the truest sense. I mean, the real hero in this book is Walker.
Right.
I mean, that's the hero. But he doesn't look like a hero. As Americans, we're always looking for that hero that looks like the hero we imagine.
Well, and Walker's imperfect. Walker is hard-headed. He finds at the end that he probably has as many grudges as the people that he's writing about. And that, you know, he's so difficult for the power structure to deal with, but he's always battling how to make payroll. He's trying to figure out, you know, he's always getting beat up. He's always, you know, he's more comfortable in a bar than he is anywhere else, and that always gets him in trouble. So I think that's a great theme. You know, your book, the second book that you've done on disorder and vengeance, really goes after the gun industry. What you're able to do in your books, you tie this to the cases that you've been involved in, and your firm's been involved in, and your friends have been involved in. Does that make it easier or harder to do the story?
These books are easy to write. I mean, they honestly are, only because I don't have to sit down and say, what if, because they actually happened. I don't have to say, what if A happened and then B, because A and B actually happened. First book was a book that really focused more on a pharmaceutical that was killing women all over the country. That really happened. That was the Yaz case that I handled and tried. The second book was a book about the DuPont. It was actually several stories, but one of them was the story about DuPont poisoning an entire community of 70,000 people with a product that they made. And in addition to that, that book also carried another case we handled, which was a case against a weapons manufacturer that made a defective gun sight. So it's not as if I have to say what if, because every day that's what is happening. For example, right now I'm writing a book about the opioid crisis in America because we're some of the lead counsel handling that case in the national litigation. So it's easy to write the paragraphs when every day that's actually happening.
But your first book, you had a male protagonist, Deke. The second book was a female. I mean, Deke was still part of the book. Gina is your protagonist in the second. Was that more difficult to use, you know, your main character being a female versus a male?
You would have thought so. Sometimes the dialogue is different. You have to really think about the dialogue, have some realism about it on how Gina might speak. But the other parts of Gina Romano weren't difficult because she has all the qualities of a top flight trial lawyer, and whether you're male, female, yellow, pink, black, it doesn't make any difference. If you have those qualities as a top flight trial lawyer, you're going to have those same similarities with whoever you are. And so it doesn't make any difference in that regard, which, by the way, raises my question to you, is I'm reading Walker going through all these trials and tribulations, you get the impression that maybe you've been there as an editor yourself.
It's totally fictional.
Yeah, give me your thought on it. Was this a way for you to actually be able to articulate some of those things that bother you about having to be an editor in a town like Pensacola?
Well, that's very perceptive. It is, you know, starting anything from scratch is difficult. And part of the romance, I think, of alt weeklies is, in maybe it's the romance, but it's just part of the nature, is that you, particularly in the beginning, you're struggling. And we were definitely underfunded. We were definitely, you know, we had 9/11, we had hurricanes, we had a recession, we had the oil spill. And we had a town which initially did not understand that you could have real investigative reporting, like of the caliber that we were doing. So there was a lot of pushback. There were weeks that we lost as many advertisers as we gained. And I wanted that in this story because I like the idea of an imperfect hero. I think that somehow holds it together when all the odds are stacked against them. And well, that's kind of where I was going with it.
In this book, almost, I'll tell you my reaction. This book, you almost automatically fall into a position of feeling like you're a best friend with the protagonist, Walker. It's a person that you want to go have a beer with, you want to talk with, because he has such a worldliness about him. I mean, he has a huge worldliness that he has, and he's living in this relatively, you know, medium-sized city.
Right.
And as he's working through that, you kind of get the impression that maybe he's too big for the city, at least in the way he views the world.
Right, right, right.
What is your take?
That's probably some of it. I think that it's there's an optimism about Walker that even though everything is, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of cards to play other than his integrity. That's about the only card. And his dog, Big Boy. That's about, and he has a heck of a, you know, he's got a good group of friends. And so there's an optimism that Pensacola can be better. Maybe than it even wants to be. Now, let's go back to Gina Romano, because I think the thing I liked about her, more so than in your first book, was Gina was also a flawed character as a protagonist. Mm-hmm. That her history, family, although she had wealth and she had a lot of benefits, that she was flawed.
Well, she was flawed, no fault of her own.
Right.
The way she was raised. I mean, the twist on Gina Romano is that we believe that the only children who suffer, and there's certainly big, big suffering from children who live in impoverished homes, but Gina Romano lived in a home with a very, very wealthy family, millionaire quality family, and the thing that changed her, the thing that she has to overcome, is how horribly she was treated by these parents. One was an opioid addicted, the mother, who was the socialite, a mother and daughter relationship are so critical. Mm-hmm. And then the father, who was an overbearing AAA type personality, who was just no damn good, to put it simply. He dominated the household. And he was abusive to Gina's brother, who's mm-hmm. abusive to Gina. And she came up really hard, which is kind of the opposite of what we believe. So often we believe that people that come up with these golden spoons, they automatically have a golden spoon in their mouth because they're raised in this wealthy household. This is just the opposite of that. And it left her very flawed. She has to overcome an awful lot. I just thought it was an interesting take because I've met so many people like that came up with everything except love and attention and really good parenting.
The challenge in writing is you've got to develop a character, a protagonist that the public can identify with. And
well, you certainly do that with Walker. I think I think people are going to be able to identify with Walker because it's somebody you truly want to have as your best friend. And it's somebody that, you know, here's what I found myself doing as I was reading Walker. I'd say, damn it, why can't you pull it together? Don't you see what's happening? Why must you put yourself in these awful situations? I mean, here's Walker getting beat up. He's getting victimized by everybody in town. He's about to lose his business, if not his life. And all of a sudden, you just find yourself getting, you know, I really like you, Wolf. I like you, but there needs to be some intervention here.
Now, the other thing about your books is the law firm is very, very similar to this law firm, and which is an asset because the way a caliber law firm like Levin Pipe Antonio operates, we don't get to see the insights to that. In the challenges of being a husband and a father in this type of high-pressured law firm, was that a challenge to capture that?
Well, good question. That wasn't a challenge to capture because I've always tried to do that. I've always tried to understand that what I do for a living is a living, but what I do for my family is what's really important. coming out of law school, I had job offers that, you know, would have had me in big cities making big, big money. But I understood that I wanted to have a home life. And the character Deke in the book, both books, in Law and Disorder and Law and Vengeance, I think what I've tried to do is characterize kind of what my perfect idea is of a family when they're having to operate within the level of pressure that you have to operate in the caliber of lawyering I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, there. I just have chosen not to do things like automobile cases and those types of things. I've chosen to do the most complex cases in the country. Well, that's what Deke does. And so in addition to that, he's got to be able to change hats. He has to put on his lawyer hat and be the best lawyer he can be in a trial, in a courtroom, in one of the most high-pressured circumstances that you'd ever want to put yourself in. And then you have to change your other hat, and you have to go home and be a great parent and a great husband and a great teacher in so many ways for your child. You have to show some wisdom, and you have to show continuous compassion, and you have to show all those things that don't fit well sometimes in the pressure of a courtroom.
The other thing that jumps out to me in your book is your bad guys are really bad. I mean, they're violent. They are bad. Now,
yeah.
Tell me about writing a bad guy, because I'm not as good at it as you are.
Writing a bad guy, I think, to me, you owe that to the reader. The reader has to invest in the story, and in your story, for example, I wouldn't be so quick to say that you hadn't invented some bad guys. Your bad guys just aren't as quick to kill people as mine are. So what I have is bad guys that are operating at a level that their conduct in their mind warrants the worst of the worst. Because if they don't get away with what they're trying to get away with, they go to jail, or the company shuts down, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's somehow the results of them not accomplishing what they want. The stakes are so high. And although in your book, the stakes are high for a couple of people, but you simply approach it a different way. They suffer other ways,
right,
because their conduct probably isn't quite as bad as the conduct I put with my bad guys in my books.
Well, there's a whole lot more money in your bad guys. They have a whole lot more at risk. All right, one last question. Feel the last.
Yeah, as I'm reading City of Grudges, it screams out for a series of books done by Un Walker. Because I think people, I closed the page, the last page of the book, and my thought was, you know, I want to hang around with Walker some more. So what do you have in mind?
Well, the second one we've already started. I've started it. It's called Blood in the Water, and it's going to be built around the floods that we had of 2014 and the jail explosion. Hmm. Walker opens up in a bar, completely disheartened because some of things haven't gone the way that he thought they would yet again.
Because of his fault.
His fault, well, yeah. He was mule-headed and stubborn. And the first book ends in a bar. The second book's going to start in a bar. And then ends up happening with the jail explosion. There's the elections are going on. And Walker's got to figure out what really happened in the explosion. He's got to get his act together again and deal with the flood. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Walker comes through it, because and that's the other piece, and you and I were talking about it earlier, is that you have an idea where things are going to go, but there's always going to be pieces that jump into the story that just make it so much fun. Now, your new book is going to be built around opioids.
Yeah. Yeah, it's built around the opioid crisis. It's a case we're actually handling on behalf of cities and counties all over the United mm-hmm. States. And so it's built around that. The Dicotomis firm is back, you know, they're back in charge. But the case actually originated in West Virginia by a lawyer, a very talented lawyer in real life, the lawyer that actually brought this case, tremendously talented young lawyer. And so the whole case starts with the Bergman Dicotomis firm getting involved with that young lawyer in going after the bad guys in a big way. And the bad guys are the opioid manufacturers and the opioid distributors. Mm-hmm. And you talk about somebody that has a lot to lose. It's both of them It's all of those corporate types. But the other thing that makes this, we're talking about bad guys. At this level, you know, what's very clear is that the DEA was actually involved in allowing some of this to happen. So you can imagine what the stakes are that mm-hmm. the Bergman Dicotomis firm has undertaken in this one.
Small group of lawyers at a table in a room where everybody else is paid much more than whether they win or lose.
Right.
And the government's on their side.
Yeah. You got the government on the side of the opioid manufacturers. You have the DEA on their side. You have the attorney generals on their side. And you have this young man in West Virginia that believes he's David confronting Goliath and that he's going to be okay in all this. Deke has his doubts as the case goes forward.
Cool. Mike, thank you.